Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Isaac Berry, who is the author of Shamanic Transformations, True Stories of the Moment of Awakening. This is a compilation work from many different shamans and people who have explored the shamanic path. And I think it's an interesting book to show how people are actually led down a path that sometimes they're not even interested or willing to go down, but led nonetheless, and a total transformation of their life occurs. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Berry.
I'm so happy to be with you.
Would you give the listening audience a little bit of your background and how you came to edit this book?
Sure. I was born in Kibbutz Beit Alpha in Israel in the 50s. It's an atheist communist kibbutz, which is a commune of people who decided to forgo any kind of spiritual practices, Judaism, in favor of going and working with the land. So for us, spirituality or any kind of religion practices were in many ways forbidden. I moved to New York in the late 70s, and I was an artist. That's the way I saw myself showing in galleries. And but for a living, I did graphic design and advertising, and that's really what I do until now in many ways. Never thought of myself as a spiritual or as a healer, or definitely not a shaman. This is something that was very far for me, and in many ways I was very skeptic, not dismissive of it, but I was maybe afraid of that. Never believe that I have those qualities to become a shaman or healer. I always thought that other people have that beautiful, magnificent gift, but not me. Why me? And so I used to go to people like that, palm reader, astrologers, readers of all kind, because I wanted to know. And but in a strange twist of fate, somehow, when I was a few years ago in Poland, in preparation for this trip, one of my family members sent me an article about my great-grandfather, who was a Kabbalistic rabbi and a healer. And it kind of dawned on me that in many ways it's not something that I could probably avoid. I had to accept that. Mm-hmm. I was very interested in the transformational moment of people who are like me, who never really thought that they have spiritual or healing abilities. And for me, it happened to me in 1997 when I went with John Perkins to Ecuador, and I met with my teacher, a man that became a teacher later on, Don Jose Joaquin Pineda. And I did some medicine, ayahuasca ceremonies with the Shuar people in the Amazon. And I had a moment, many moments there that really changed my perspective of life. And it took me 8 months when I came back. It was a very difficult 8 months. I was very depressed because I couldn't bring these two worlds together, the world of the unseen world, the world of spirit, and the world of the material world, the world that we are in here. And how to bridge that? That was so difficult for me to accept. I had to forego all my skepticism, all the cynicism that I built around me for all those years, so I could live in this society.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that we are led where we need to be led, even though we may have belief systems and, you know, prejudices against that. And I think that's a common theme.
Yes.
And I think it shows up frequently in the stories in your work here.
Yes, and that's why I was so interested in collecting stories like those in the book from very well-known shamans that I always mm-hmm. looked up to. They were some of them my teachers that I always looked at them as a very special people. But the mm-hmm. truth of the matter is that we all have experiences like that. And the purpose of this book is really for people to read from people that they heard of or they know so well, and they revere them, and to mm-hmm. to encourage them to come out of the closet and claim their power.
Right. Right. Well, I was particularly intrigued by the one called Raptor Medicine. Do you want to share that with the listening audience? That was a particularly interesting story.
Can you refer to
it? Oh, it's the one called Raptor Medicine, where all these owls
keep
finding all of these dead owls.
You know, what's so nice about these stories is that each person encounter different signs from spirit, and mm-hmm. In this particular story, that came to him in the forms of birds, and these birds start to show up in his life. And in the beginning, it really didn't make any sense to that author, and then and all of a sudden, it made so much sense when he started to accept that. I think that that's a common theme in the book, that how we the signs are all around us.
They are.
The question is, can we see them? Can we bring them into our life? Can we acknowledge them? And I think the part of it that is so difficult about it is that once you accept them, then you have to live by it. You have to mm-hmm. to say that's different reality. You know, that's the one that I need to pursue.
Well, you know, many of us in the Western world are brought up to think that the world is out there, you know, out in the outside, and that there is very little other than the third dimension and the third dimensional influences. And then when things like this happened to Thomas Mach, who started finding dead owls everywhere, or mm-hmm. owls that were dying.
Yes.
I guess the first one was not dead. And just I think what you have to understand is that we're in relationship with what we think is the outside world, that is actually really just a projection of what's inside of us, and that inner space is really where everything's happening. And then it is the inner part of our being, which is connected to source, is capable of projecting just about anything to the outside world so that we can see it outside of ourselves. And then what that means is that the entire system is completely different than what we were, you know, what we originally had thought the outside world was. It's just simply a projection screen for what's
yes.
going on inside of us. And once you understand that, then you really do step into the shamanic world.
Yes, and I think that Thomas Mach's story about the Rapture Medicine is a beautiful example of that. But if you read Hank Rosselman, The Three Stages of Spiritual Unfolding, he sum up it so well, you know, the belief, the faith, and the experience, segments of or stages of our life. And in many ways, if you look at children, children have all of those stages encompasses in them in their life experience. They grow up at the early age believing, and they have faith in what they see, and they have it from their own personal experience. Mm-hmm. And I think what kills that is really the way our society teaches children not to trust their belief system, not to have faith, and not to trust their own personal experience with nature and with the surrounding. That is such a, in many ways, a curse on our society, that people do not have faith, belief, and experience, and personal experience, and trusting their personal experience, because mm-hmm. every child belief in what he sees, and he have faith in what they believe in, but most children learn from their personal experience with nature, with their society. That's how they see the world and believe in it. And I think that is until around the age of 4 or 5 or 6, they still live in that in-between worlds, like you said. They mm-hmm. still see the magical beauty of the world, even if we don't approve of that. But they learn to conform, and the conformity is the danger of that. Like, there's a beautiful story about a person there who used to talk to the snake under the bed in his early childhood.
Right.
And for him,
right.
it was really, really real. They were mm-hmm. his friends. And when he made the round back, the return into that belief system, he found out that the snakes were his power animals, and they were his teachers and his guides. And I think that in many ways, that the return of shamanism now into our society is very much like that. It's about a call for us to have belief, to have faith, and to have the direct experience with the world without using the gatekeeper, the mind, the logic. That's what I think drawn so many people now to the work of shamanism.
Right, yeah. I was fascinated by learning that the Black Panther was so important in shamanism is mm-hmm. in terms of being a healer, because when I was probably about 4 or 5, I had a giant Black Panther as a pet, a stuffed one, not real.
Uh-huh.
And then later on, when I went to college, I actually took this Black Panther that belonged to my father. It was a ceramic Black Panther.
Uh-huh.
And it was so funny because he was visiting me, and he goes, "That's where that went," you know, because it's on my shelf. And so I gave him a white panther instead. I said, "Here's your white panther," you know, because I took the Black Panther because I'm the healer in the family. So we are really attracted to our power animals, even though we don't know that they're our power animals. We have no idea. But Black Panthers were really special to me when I was as far back as I can remember, and I'm a healer. That's what, you know. That's
a great example. That's a great example of what we all experience, or many of us experience. And I think that all the listeners, all the people who are on that path, had that magical animal or spirit that guiding us from very mm-hmm. early childhood. And we truly have faith in them, and we truly have belief in them, and we truly have a direct experience with them. And mm-hmm. if lucky for you, you continue to hold that experience and faith and belief in them which is such a beautiful story. And yes, the Black Panther in the shamanic tradition, or in certain shamanic traditions, the tradition of the Amazon, are very important, and they are really symbolizing the shaman, the healer, is the shapeshifter between reality.
Right.
The animal that teaches us to be waiting in patience, to learn, to discern what is important, and when once the decision was made to go and to jump on it and to make it happen. And it teaches us to patient. It teaches us to see in the darkness, in the shadows of our life and in our subconscious, to see in the light, in the dark. It is a very, very powerful, and it's also an animal that is a territorial, that keeps its boundaries. So that's all the qualities of the shamans and the healer.
Yeah, that's very true. And so I guess my story illustrates that even before you have, conscious knowledge that shamanism exists, because when I was 5 and 6, I'd never heard the word shaman. Before you really have any ideas about anything, your power animal is with you. So
that
precedes everything. It precedes, I don't even know that I knew that much about what a panther was or where they were in the world when I had my first panther that I took everywhere. I slept with it. It was always with me. It's very interesting.
Yeah, my two grandchildren separately adopted penguins without knowing, both of them. One lives in Israel and one lives in New York. And they both chose penguin to be their, in many ways, spiritual guide, which is very strange and beautiful. If I were not doing this work myself, I would just dismiss it and give them other animals. But in coming from this consciousness, I encourage them. It's such a beautiful experience that they have with this particular animal.
There's a funny story that happened here at the aquarium in Atlanta. I was walking through it one day, and there was like a change. There was a change in security. So I asked the guard. I said, why did you put all these things in place? He said, well, there was an 8-year-old boy who came through here with his class, and his mom found out that he put a penguin, a baby penguin, in his backpack and took it home. So I wonder if that kid had a penguin power animal, too. It was kind of funny. But he got out with a penguin in his backpack. Clever kid. The mother made him bring it back.
Well, I hope he's going to have the same kind of relationship to nature when he grows up. That would not frighten him, that experience, and to reject
nature. I don't know that he got in a lot of trouble. Maybe with his mom he did, but they didn't. I don't think they arrested him. But anyway, that was... No, but I think that kids are strongly attracted to certain animals, like you said, and it probably does have to do with if we could interpret what that means, it probably does have to do with their life path. The owls in the raptor medicine had to do with him being invited to learn shamanism, being invited in. The owls in Harry Potter were going to Harry Potter's house to invite him into the wizardry school. Mm-hmm. So that was they were the messengers.
Yeah.
So
I wanted to say about the moment of awakening. there's a story, a beautiful story about from Luis Meal Madrone about a moment of awakening. And in this story, he's writing that from the Native American point of view, he's a Lakota healer, that there are no one moment of awakening. You know, when I thought about creating this book, I came up from my own experience of a moment of experience. And in his experience, in Native people experience, every moment is a moment of awakening. Every moment is is a moment of discovery, of magic, of this beautiful understanding that the world is a magical place. So it shows a big contrast in the way Western mind, Western education taught us to be, and indigenous societies' experiences of nature, of being with nature. Because when you walk into the mountain, or when you are doing your dishes, or when you're crossing the street, you don't have to wait for that particular moment to be enlightened. Every moment is that moment if you are open yourself to the belief, to faith, and to the experience of that, and see the magical possibilities in this world. That's a beautiful story that was given to us through Luis Meal Madrone.
Yeah, that is. And I think we sink back into the, you know, regular, ordinary life with where that consciousness is not possible way too often. And I know that if I'm meditating a lot or resting a lot, then it's a lot easier for me to stay in that space. But if I get tired, or if I get, you know, kind of too busy, the world shifts back into a different form of reality.
Well, that's the journey. The journey is for us to live consciously and understand that we create the world around us. We see it in the way that we interact with it, and then you can flip that moment of exhaustion into in your consciousness, and you start to see the beauty of it. The magic that is around you, and it's easier then to work with that magic to change your life.
Right. So, do you have other stories that you'd like to mention here?
Well, I think that it would be wonderful for everybody to read these stories themselves. There are all stories of people like you, like me, like you, that one moment they see the world in a different way. And the interesting part of all of those stories is that they really happened in different places, in different situations. They didn't happen when they went to a temple or to a church or to very spiritual places. They happen in normal situation, in places that are considered mundane, and or top of the mountains, or by the river, or in, you know, many different places. And it's interesting to follow those experiences with people like that, and to see how they can relate to you, to your life. And then I think that's such a beautiful lesson from this book.
Yeah, it's like no matter where you are, when you're ready, your teacher appears.
Yeah.
You know, be that a physical teacher. In many cases in the book, a physical teacher they got connected with a physical teacher, but some of them just got connected with their inner teachers.
Many times, yes. That's for some people. It happened in a workshop they took, and but
mm-hmm.
and for some people it happened during a sickness when they mm-hmm. physically were totally exhausted. They had to find their faith and belief and in their experience and transform and transcend through their sickness, which is a very common theme in the shamanic initiation, is to
right.
To have what is called the shaman's sickness, where you are going through an incredible life-threatening experience to find faith and belief. So there are stories like that in that book too.
Yeah, I think illness breaks down ego strength, because
yes.
you really, the ego is of no use to you during an illness. It's it can only be indignant that it's happening to it, but it doesn't
exactly.
really help you get out of the illness.
Yeah,
you have to go to your guidance for that.
Yeah, it challenges you to go to the limit, which is a very important sign, a test for the shaman too. In
mm-hmm.
initiation, you're driven to the edge of your ability to accept the vastness, to experience the magic of this world only when you surrender to it.
Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people in our generation, back in the 60s and 70s, as well as people in subsequent generations, have experienced plant medicine as a way of understanding that our perceptual realities that we're normally used to looking at aren't all that there is out there. And you want to speak a little bit about how plant medicine can show you what you can't see otherwise?
There are many different kinds of plant medicine that people in many different areas of the world are using. Today, most popularly, they use ayahuasca that is grown in the jungle, in the Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many different plants that are that use mushrooms and barks and leaves and other way of the people throughout the generation. It's not something new. It's been used for generations, from thousands of years. People always had this desire to transcend and to meet this vast bank of knowledge that exists in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And today, people use peyote and San Pedro and ayahuasca and datura, and there's many different plants that they use, and in many ways those plants or those visions and experiences are challenging our perception of reality, because it forces you to meet and to acknowledge the spiritual world that we all live surrounded by. Those experiences could be very traumatic for people who are not don't have shamanic experience, or they are not versed with working with spirit. And I kind of recommend to people who are thinking about doing this kind of work to learn shamanism before, to learn the principles of shamanism, to have power animals and spirit guides before they go and jump mm-hmm. into that experience, because it could be bringing information and visions to people who are not prepared. And we, I experience that a lot with people who are coming back from Peru and other places like that. It's a very mm-hmm. challenging experience, both on the physical experiential body ways, and then also on the spiritual way.
I think I agree with that. It's best to be done as part of a ceremony where you're with other people who are knowledgeable about the whole process. And it's also good to be in a situation where it's legal, because there's places in the U.S. that it's not legal, and that could get you in trouble. So, you know, you've got to consider all those factors.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very much so, and I understand people who want to take it cold turkey, but you don't want to go into this experience without the background, without the knowledge of how to deal with spirits. Spirits are real, and they mm-hmm. could be punishing too. They're not all very good spirits. Like people, they all have different characters and different agendas. And so you want to learn how to deal with that before you go into these experiences.
True. Now, just in general, a little bit of information about shamanism. You know, we have a world here that appears to be self-contained, although it really isn't. but in terms of the way the shaman views the world, there is. Do you want to describe a little bit about the other worlds that the shaman travels in and mm-hmm. becomes familiar with, that then can influence what is happening in our world here, the third dimension? You know, how does that work in terms of helping others that say may be ill, or helping others that are say mentally ill? Because that has a lot to do with what's going on in the next world. So you want to address that a little bit?
Sure. I wanted to say to people who may not know the word, where the word came from. So the word came from the Tungus tribe is in Siberia, and there are many different variations on what it means. You can find it in different teachings and different books. People talk about a shaman as a person who is a go-between, between the material world or the seen world and the unseen world. Mm-hmm. I have asked a Tungus shaman what it means in Tungus, and he said to me that this is the keeper of the fire. That's the definition that they use. And the mm-hmm. keeper of the fire I like that very much as a definition, because it really explains the role of the shaman in a community. It's the keeper of the knowledge, the keeper of their well-being of a community. So it's a call for service from spirits to the shaman. Mm-hmm. It's not just the ability to bring information from the spirit world, because we all do that all the time. We all have dreams, we all have visions, we all have daydreams, we all have deja vus, we all have all kind of spiritual experiences that in our daily life. So in many ways, many shamans believe that we are all shamans. We are all equipped, we all have the gift of seeing. The difference is that what we call shaman is dedicate his life to the well-being of the community, mm-hmm. which is a great responsibility and a great importance. So what the shamans do, they recognize that disease and inflictions and other events that happens in in our middle world or in the world that we are living in happen a lot because of interference of spirit. And so what they go and they journey to those spirit and find out what's the cause, roots of the disease and sicknesses. And they negotiate between the spirit world and the spirit here, or the people here, to bring change.
Right.
That's the role of the shaman, really, is to... Now, but they many of the shamans, they use the spirit, the unseen spirit, but then there are spirits of plants, and there are spirits of trees, and there are spirits of water, and there are spirits in everything that we encounter. It all vibrates with energy, and this energy is the spirit. And all of have consciousness. So we are interacting with our own consciousness and the consciousness of everything that is around us to create or to bring back balance to the people and environment that we are surrounded by.
Well, that's a real good explanation. Thank you for that. Would you like to give your contact information?
Sorry?
Would you like to give your contact information? Do you have a website or?
My website is my name, itzhakberry.com, itzhakberry.
And can they get your book there, or where can they get the book?
No, they can get the book on all the websites that carry books and bookstores, and everywhere books are sold.
Okay.
Yeah. Subject of we are all shamans and the visions, that's what I wrote in my first book, The Gift of Shamanism, because it was so important for me to demystify the notion that only special people have spiritual power.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important for every listener to understand that the dreams that he sees at night, the visions that he sees, the daydreams, the hologram, the encounter with ghosts and spirits, and the knowing when the phone rings and you know who the person is behind. I mean, it's all signs of interaction with spirit.
Uh-huh.
We are connected with spirit, even if we don't pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of that is that once you realize that you are constantly connected with spirit or surrounded with spirit, you can't go on with your life without taking responsibility to the vision that you see. And I think that a lot of people are running away from that, from their responsibility to become to live in both worlds, which is what the shamans do.
Mm-hmm.
They are living in constantly with the ability to navigate between these two worlds, to understand that every plant has spirit, that every action you make has implication, that every word you say have implication. So that responsibility is very much well understood in indigenous societies. We don't do that. We assign our logical mind to decide for us. And so going this way, going on this path, is the path of responsibility.
Right. Yeah, I think that a lot of that came out of the teachings of at least some of the standard religions, where you didn't really have personal power, and you certainly didn't have the ability to communicate directly with, you know, the divine. You had to go through the mediator, the priest, or the minister, or the whatever. The
That's yeah. true. That is absolutely true. And I think that the renaissance or the resurrection of shamanic beliefs and practices now in the West and in the Western world is really a call for us to be the connector or to connect directly to spirit, not to rely on media or government or churches or health insurance to tell us what we feel and what we believe in and what is our personal experience. So in many ways it's a call of for freedom and personal responsibility, and that's really what I like so much about that path, and that's why I'm promoting it, because it is so important for our own survival as species on this earth to be connected to the vast knowledge of spiritual world, to be our own vehicle to retrieve it and to act on it responsibly.
Yeah, I think more and more people are waking up, not just to their own spiritual nature, but also waking up to understanding some of the forces in the world that are, you know, perhaps control the mainstream media, control,
yeah.
or are very prominent in government, are very prominent in the food industry, in pharmaceuticals. That There's a big network of, I guess, companies and banks and other corporate interests that permeate everything, and probably more prominent in the U.S. than in some other countries, but really is worldwide and tries to shape belief systems and tries to make us all into consumers and may even try to start wars for their own personal gain. So as you wake up to that, you really begin to see the world as it probably is rather than what you think it is before, which isn't right either.
Yes, and I think that this is why it's so exciting. It's really a pivotal moment. It's a conscious revolution that we are all participating in. And the forces, what we call, cannot deny it. That we are all waking up to take our place as human being, as awakened human being. It's such an exciting time to be alive, and to be a participate in that. And you know, I publish a website. It's called shamanportal.org. That is a hub for all the shamanic community, the global shamanic community, to post workshops and teachings and trips, and there is news and articles, and so I'm trying to bring the shamanic community together, and I can see who comes to visit this website. And most of the people who come to take information from this website are people from the Silicon Valley, from New York, from the most industrious, technologically advanced centers in the world, and the majority, of course, is the United States and San Francisco area, New York, Chicago, Baltimore, the places where young people work with in the digital revolution. But they themselves understand that this is not the answer for all. They are looking for the deeper meaning of life, the deeper understanding, and they want that personal responsibility. They want to have the personal freedom. And they are the majority of people now who are participating in the shamanic revolution.
Well, it's it's probably the indigo children and the older crystal children that are tapping in.
Well, I think that the hope is that we will teach our children to walk on that path. I can see it in my children, although they are not shamanic practitioners, but they definitely devote their life to making life better for other people.
Right.
They have a service call as their life purpose. And the more people like them, and I'm sure that they will raise their kids in the same way. And that's really the the beauty of that we are waking up to that responsibility as human being, not just as a consumer being, to to save that life we have here. It's such a short life on this earth. We really want to leave this earth to our grandchildren in a much better way that we received when we were children. I mean, I don't see it, actually. I think that it's actually worse than what we came in.
And I think for most of us, we also have a path. I mean, we have a path that we probably chose before we came in.
Yeah.
That is the ideal path. I mean, there's other paths. You have free will here. You can go in a number of different directions. But there's probably an ideal path, and after we get done with child rearing and you know, education and, you know, the more immediate contracts that we have, that's when these other paths, including the shamanic path, can come in. Mm-hmm. There are other spiritual paths other than the shamanic path, obviously, but it's one that is very popular and very, one that allows a lot of different types of individuals to learn this method of communication with spirit. So, you know, when you're real busy, when you're in school or you're raising children, you may not have time for any of this. But later on in life, you know, especially, I would say when you start to get really bored with things, you need to look around and see if one of these pathways can renew your interest in life.
Well, I think that it's very important for people to understand what their life purpose is. Why are they chosen to come here, and what purpose that they fulfill, and why they chose the teachers, their parents, their coworkers, and the people around them. What is it that they came here to do? It's a driving force of consciousness. And if you're not sure what your life purpose is, you're happy to be confused and depressed because you're not really here to do what your soul chose you to come here for. Knowing it to give you incredible clarity, give you power, give you the conviction to pursue what you came here to do. And in all the shamanic work, that's what I'm trying to do with my clients, is to help them find what it is that they came here to do, and and to be aligned with that.
Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. I want to thank you for joining us. I wanted to mention again your first book, The Gift of Shamanism, and then the current book, Shamanic Transformations, True Stories of the Moment of Awakening, which is a compilation work of many fairly well-known people within the shamanic world and their stories. Would you like to one more time give your contact information?
It's my website. It's my name. It's itzhakbeery.com, itzhakbeery.com.
And then you're also the founder of shamanportal.org, right?
Yes.
So that's
important
to mention.
Yeah, and
too.
For people who are interested in shamanism, this is a great place for them to find trips all over the world, workshops and training, news and books and teachers and all kind of resources that shamanic community are looking for. Everything is in one place. So it really helps the spread the word for teachers and for people who are interested in shamanism or the shamanic experience.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a delightful conversation.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure to help share this knowledge with people and give them courage to experience and to have faith and belief in themselves and to make this world really worth leaving it to our grandchildren and those who come behind them. I hope I made a little bit of a difference.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Well, this is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Join us next week with Athena Starr, Celebrities in Spirit, and then Dr. Kelly Turner on the 2nd of January, Radical Remission, Surviving Cancer Against All Odds. Thank you very much, and join us next week.